considering what's being what's important in terms of reflection, investigation, in our practice. And of course, there's good many things, but you know, it's really essential to consider very carefully the nature of our just our mind and body, what we how we can consider ourselves. You know, it's not when we think of our practice, why we practice, what we're trying to understand, what we're trying to attain. The sense of myself, the world outside me, me being afflicted by the world, being impinged on, being swamped by the world, being threatened by the world, being enticed by the world, used by the world, all the permutations of how we think the world around us is some reality. With ourselves, me and my problems, me and my difficulties, me and my specialness, me and my need for my recognition, whether it's being recognized as wonderful, worthy, or recognized as in our true reality of how unworthy and hopeless we are. It's the all of these things sort of take get very large on the screen. And that's how we experience life, and that's how the Buddha expressed it. Is they say what is what takes precedence? Lokatipadaya, the world taking precedence. Atta tipataya, the self taking precedence. But there's also another way. Dhamma tipataya, the Dhamma taking precedence. Truth taking precedence. Not looking on experience from the viewpoint and are placing the world as central to things, or me, the self, as central to things, but Dhamma is central, truth is central, and this is a radical shift. And as long as we view things in terms of either the world or of self, then we'll continue to suffer. We'll continue to experience unsatisfactoriness and be discontent. But the placing of Dhamma firmly in the center of how we view things, experience things, this is the way out of suffering. This is the way to peace. So that looking on what we, and the way of looking at things of Dhamma, as you know, looking on it centrally rather than, you know, the whole structure of the five khandhas, looking on things as form, feeling, perceptions, volitional formations, and consciousness. This is what is experience. And this is what experiences. It's both. But it's just that, it's just form, whether it's, you know, for all the variegated, multifarious forms that we see or even hear, smell, taste, touch, it's all form, it's just physical form. And whether it's external or internal, it's just form. Whether it's this body, the body of others, it's just form. And whether it's refined or coarse, it's just form. And whether it's wanted or unwanted, it's just form. So that to and that's looking on it as Dhamma. Rather than, you know, once we get into the realm of the world or the self, then it just keeps proliferating into the realm of, you know, is it attractive, is it unattractive, is it conducive to security, or is it fearful? Should I get it, or should I run away from it? So that the way the Buddha is having us look at things in order to be free is to look on it in terms of, this is just form. It's just physical form, material form, consisting of four elements. Earth, water, fire, air, which are just signifying whether it's solidity or cohesion or kind of movement or caloricity, heat or lack of heat, this is just form. So it's an interesting reflection. to bring up, you know, whether the or the, you know, the form is whether it's youthful or aging, whether it's sick or it's healthy. It's just form. So it takes that either the personal or the proliferative out of it, and it's just form. And so that, and this is, if we really want to experience freedom, then this is a way out. This is a way to the Buddha gives us this opportunity to look at things in a different way, and the feelings in the mental realm, feelings and how, and certainly how we experience things for ourselves. To investigate, when we experience feeling, what do we, what are we experiencing? Pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, a neutral feeling, and then, of course, the whole edifice of desire and aversion and delusion is built up out of that. But what we originally experience is just a feeling. In terms of how we experience the world around us or ourselves, there's always this feeling tone, part and parcel with each moment of experience, and it has that, and just that basic quality, pleasant, painful, neutral. But as the Buddhist points out, that the pleasant has the underlying tendency to desire, sort of lurking there. The painful has the underlying tendency within the mind toward aversion, and the neutral has the underlying tendency to delusion. So that we, and as long as we don't see it clearly, don't investigate it, don't pay attention to it, or not, and don't establish a sense of caution and clarity, then, we'll take it and run with it. And we just, a moment of pleasure can just lead to that kind of seeking desire, a moment of aversion can just create complications in life that last for years, lifetimes. And then it's just a feeling. And it's just so ephemeral. And it just arises and it bubbles, and that's what you say the image that the Buddha uses. Feelings are like bubbles. The bubble sort of establishes itself, shortly, just the bubble bursts and there's nothing left there. There's nothing there. There wasn't anything there. It's just this feeling. So the Buddha has this encourages us to contemplate, contemplate pleasant feeling as painful, painful feeling as a dart, as a barb sticking in us, and neutral feeling to contemplate it as impermanent. Which, I mean, all of them are impermanent, but to really bring us up into the mind, bring us up into this, onto the screen. When we're contemplating these five khandhas as a means of really trying to establish the heart in Dhamma, establish the heart in truth, rather than just running around after our blind habits and conditioning. Something to stop the mind from its habitual ranting and clambering after just the next experience or blind reaction. And the Buddha pointing, looking at what we think is pleasant. You know, how pleasant is it actually? You know, how much do we invest in hopes of gratification over even just the whiff of pleasant feeling? Ajahn Sumedho, in the early days, and Wappapong, and just that worry and concern of getting caught up and swept up in things, and had this, and it's just something that came, some random thought that came up through his mind, and he wrote it up and put it in the wall of his kuti. And he just said, "Don't sell your ass for a marshmallow." There are various permutations which we all have personally. What we'll grab after something which we perceive as pleasant, and compromise all of our ideals and hopes and aspirations, so that challenge that what we think is pleasant, because what we think is pleasant is always changing on us. We're always being separated from it. Do we ever have it long enough to truly satisfy and gratify, make us really happy? Never happens. Never happens. And to look on what is painful experience as a barb, as something which is it's like in the Buddha's time. The image of a barb or an arrow being shot into one, or the barb, as they have one is, especially in tropical countries, you go walking anywhere and there's always these, in the forest in particular, this wonderful plethora of creepers and vines and plants that all have stickers and barbs and spikes and thorns on them, always manage to get stuck into one. But once there, you say, once you get a thorn or one has to pull it out. One has to take it out. You can't live one's life walking around with these barbed things sticking in one. So that, you know, painful feeling, right? Look on and, you know, how do we not get caught in this? How do we not keep exacerbating experience with more painful feeling? And looking on neutral feeling as impermanent. Because neutral feeling is, there's that underlying tendency to delusion, not seeing clearly, or drifting, or losing one's clarity, sharpness, mindfulness. So that to really bring up that perception of impermanence, what is neutral, what is matter present and painful. This is very quickly going to change. What is it when it changes? What is it going to change into? What's coming up? Is it just going to be a roll of the dice, or am I going to have some mindfulness and clarity to deal with this? Bringing up that the perception of impermanence. So, working with feeling, as an aspect of the khandhas, and really, but it's a it's an extraordinarily important aspect of the khandhas, because this is where one of the fundamental building blocks of all of our thinking and proliferating is feeling. Of course, the other one is perception. Sanya, in Thai, it's a perception is translated as some kind of manmai, which is we place importance and meaning. What gives things importance and meaning? That is what perception does. And another function of perception is memory. Of course, we create importance and meaning out of memory, the sort of memory banks of what was pleasant, what was unpleasant, what was liked, what was disliked. What was approved of, what was disapproved of, what was essential, what was unessential. Besides the whole realm of what actually are things, what are the names of things, and it's sort of the naming quality as well. That we look at something and call it anything is because of perception. So, looking at a tree. It isn't a tree. We don't experience tree. What we experience are shape, color. It's perception that remembers that particular shape, configuration, is a tree. That's what's called a tree. Which, that's pretty straightforward. See? But then it also perception is when we're in any particular situation, and it's what configures the kind of our value that we, the importance and meaning that we place on something, so that some of it is memory, and whether we're conscious of it or not, there's the perception is forming these values and judgments about things, and giving us food for how to gauge and judge a particular situation or person. I can remember watching this in Thailand in the early years, early years as a monk, and watching the whole realm of perception creating importance and meaning out of things that I had no idea. That's one of the wonderful things of sort of stepping out of one's culture as well, and we're on completely unfamiliar territory, and the mind is scrambling to make importance and meaning out of everything, the addiction to trying to fit something into a familiar slot, and then having a name for it, having a particular feeling for it, and it's sort of like. And it goes to familiar things, or like seeing something and then disliking it, and not because we have any experience. This is what, especially being in a situation where culturally completely unknown, have no history with the people. Still, the mind is sort of spinning out stories and judgments, and trying to come up with this sort of importance and meaning. And the thing is that our mind is doing this all the time. When we meet somebody, or when we see somebody, we see what they're doing. This whole collection and collected body of experience that we turn to, and place a value on it. This is important in some way. Is it? Is this going to be pleasant or unpleasant? Should I approve of it or not approve of it? Is this going to be good or bad? And the perception is already start. I mean, you're already sort of putting that perception on it, and then you come up with the reasons after it. And you can find all sorts of reasons to support whatever basic perception you perceive. Somebody in a way that you don't like, and it's just that basic perception, and it might not have anything to do with that person at all. It could be because you're actually in a bad mood internally, or attraction in the same way, and then the mind proliferates around it. that seeing, that, you know, I mean, this is just khandhas, aggregates, lumps. It's another translation, really, of khanda, sort of lumps of being, groups of how the, just groups of function within our being. There's the form function, there's the feeling function, perception function. And they interact, there's no sort of hard and fast division between them. They affect each other. But it's useful for reflection, sort of seeing how that works. Mental formation, reflecting, investigating the kind of and this is where we get engaged. The feeling and perception are more passive, in the sense of they're more instinctual, for lack of a better word. They're more fundamental to the process of our being, and but then the volitional formations, may they have that quality of volition, intention. One is engaged, one has picked it up, and one's engaging in it, one has, and volition is karma. We're creating karma with those thought formations. And whether those thought formations are wholesome or unwholesome, whether they're wise or foolish, or whether they're clear or confused, is dependent on those thought formations. And we, there's volition there, there's intention there. The whole range of experience of whether or just experiencing angry, negative thoughts, opinionated, self-centered thoughts, sublime thoughts of compassion, sympathetic joy. Well, those are all volitional formations. Mindfulness is a volitional formation. Wisdom is a volitional formation. We actually choose. So that, to have the clarity to be able to understand this whole process of how the khandhas work, because of the sort of the nature of Dhamma, in that all actions have a result, we experience the fruits of what we say, what we do, what we think. And are we going to take responsibility for that? That's the whole sort of crux of practice, and the opportunity that the Buddha gives us, one, to take responsibility for it, and to be actually liberated within those khandhas. Is maybe we're aware of what we experience. That's what consciousness does. It gives, its function is to be aware, to be conscious of sensory experience, whether it's sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, or the workings of the mind. We're conscious of it. We know it. Because we know it, we feel it. Because we feel it, then we react on it. So it spins. It spins like all constantly. And this is what the, say, you know, the image of samsara is, the, is this constant movement and rotation, endless wandering. So that to bring attention, wisdom, wise consideration to the experience of these five khandhas, to experience them in the way of Dhamma rather than in the way of just getting caught up in the world or getting caught up in the self. Let's see. Lopachar, I can remember one of the images he used for talking about the khandhas. Is that this? You know, it's like a house, seeing a house, and somebody calling from the house. It's like it seems like a friend, or seems like somebody who is we're familiar with and know. And you go to the house and you open the door and they pull out a gun and shoot you. That's what our khandhas do. They call out to us. This is me. Or this is the, you know, this is the world. This is your friendly world talking. it hits us, and we wonder why does this hurt? Why did this disappoint? Why didn't it satisfy? And the thing is it's never satisfied. It's never given security. It's never given a sense of refuge. So the khandhas have always been sort of deceiving. Particularly the khandhas the upadana khandhas that are affected by clinging. And as long as we still have greed, hatred, and delusion, they're affected by clinging. So on a certain level, it's academic. Which is the khandhas, and which are the khandhas that are affected by clinging? Until we really get our act together, then they're all affected by clinging. So that. To be able to reflect and investigate and use it as a, we have to use it. If we don't understand this, we're always drawn back into the world or the self. We have to understand these concepts. We have to, and this is where we're liberated. I mean, this is where we're able to be free as well. There's this wonderful discourse where asks Venerable Sariputta about, you know, some basic, you know, ask, you know, well, what's the fundamentals of practice for somebody who's training, somebody who's you know, say a practitioner, a bhikkhu. Sariputta says, well, basically the practice is you know, investigating the five khandhas of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. And said, if one is diligent in that and practices properly, one would experience they would experience stream entry and would have an insight into Dhamma. And then, so then Mahakutita asked, what's the practice for somebody who's a stream enterer? You investigate the form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. And so then you would, you know, then until you experience the fruits of that when coming into fruition by say experiencing the level of Sakadagami, once returner. Of course, he goes through the whole thing. That brings the results of once returner, brings the results of non-returner, anagami, brings the results of arahantship, fully liberated. And then Mahakotita says, what's the mode of practice for an arahant, one who's fully liberated? Investigate form, feeling, perceptions, volitional formations, and consciousness as impermanent, unsatisfactory, not self. And he says, and the fruits of that are, and he said, something like a pleasant abiding here and now and mindfulness and clear comprehension. These are the fruits of, you know, even for an arahant, then still the investigation is there, reflection, consideration, seeing things clearly, seeing things in their true nature. So taking these five khandhas and investigating them, practicing with them, working with them, understanding them. These are our tools. This is what we have to work with. This is sort of the raw material of practice. We don't actually have anything else. This is actually all we have. It is for volitional formations and consciousness. And it can be held, applied, perceived in all sorts of different ways. By drawing attention to it and really, how do I hold this in terms of Dhamma? Then we have an opportunity to really transform those khandhas which are subject to clinging to khandhas which are informed and steeped in truth, in wisdom, in qualities of loving kindness and compassion, that which is to to our benefit and to the benefit of everybody, all of the problem is this are these five khandhas. Creating suffering for ourselves and sort of creating suffering for various other five khandhas around. Learning to understand and use these khandhas. So it's a fruitful realm for investigation.